Good day, ladies and gentlemen, you gators and grannies to the Big Puzzle Radio Show. My name is Barry Prince, and I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in Terrace, British Columbia, broadcasting through People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. We are a viewer-supported station, guys, so if you like what's going on the station and some of the content coming, please hit the donate button. I know the people over there at PR would really appreciate it. Glad you joined us today, and welcome to the show. I'm joined today by Travis Patron, who is the leader of the Canadian Nationalist Party in Canada here, an uprising Canadian political party, and Mark Dixon, who I kind of call just a really old Canadian who's had a really good life in Canada and now is trying to give a lot back to his country, involved very deeply in politics. And we're going to talk about South Africa today and some of the travesties and hypocrisies going on in South Africa. And I told my guests prior to the show, I follow a lot of events going on around the world, but I haven't given South Africa as much attention as I should, I believe. So I'm glad to have these two gentlemen join me today, and I'm in for probably a little bit of an education myself today. Welcome to the show, gentlemen, and thanks for joining me. And Travis, would you tell people a little bit about yourself, and let's get into this conversation about what's going on in South Africa.
Very well. First of all,
something happened.
Political party.
Something going
actively.
Barry, something's so going on with his audio. Barry.
Which one?
Barry.
Yes, Steve.
Something's going on with his audio.
His audio?
Yeah. You're not hearing it?
I'm hearing him.
Every
I'm
word?
Barry. I'm hearing.
I'm only getting bits and pieces of Travis.
Okay. I don't know what to say, Steve. I'm hearing him fine.
Well,
I am not hearing.
Unfortunately, you don't matter, Barry. The listeners are not hearing him either.
Okay.
They're
so
only
what
getting
do we
bits
do
and pieces
this,
also.
Steve?
Travis, try to drop off and then come back into the call. Continue on. Barry,
discussing it in our.
Okay, wait. Sorry to interrupt you, Travis. They're not hearing you talk for some reason. I don't know why. I'm hearing.
No, we're not hearing you. No.
Okay, well, okay. What do you want to do? Reboot the call, Steve? I don't know what to say here.
He needs to drop off and then try to come back in.
Okay, can you do that, Travis? And if that's not working on your Skype, we'll give you a phone number that, or you can give us a phone number and we can call you on a phone line. But we're having a problem. People are having a problem hearing you, so I don't want you to continue on without the audience hearing you. So. Maybe you can drop the call, Travis, and we'll try calling in again. Steve, is that what you want him to do?
Have him come back into the call, yes.
Okay, could you do that, Travis, and we'll see if we get some audio off you, because right now people aren't hearing you.
Sure, I can try that.
Seems like they're only hearing him when I'm talking for some reason.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I don't know what's going on here. Just another typical glitch with Skype. Mark, welcome to the show. And can you hear us, Mark?
I'm hearing your voice. I could not hear Travis. I can hear your voice now. I wasn't hearing anything up till just a moment ago, so I don't know what's happening with the audio on this broadcast.
Okay, are you hearing him, Steve? Or is the people over in
Mark is fine.
Internet?
Mark is fine.
Mark is fine?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you a phone number. I'll type a phone number in here for Travis for you, Steve, and maybe you can try calling him on a phone. Well, he posted a number in there that we can call him on a phone line. Could you maybe try calling that number and see if that works?
I'm going to have him try coming back into this call first.
Okay, and then we'll, Mark, in the meantime, I know you've been really actively involved in what's going on in South Africa, so maybe you could give us a few points on what's really going on there and where we're going from here.
Well, shall we wait until Mr. Travis is fine?
Well, we got dead air right now, unless Travis is back in on the call.
No, it's not dead air. You two are talking on air.
Okay. Hi. Okay. Well, I'm very concerned about what's happening in South Africa. I've talked to many individuals. I have seen many videos. I've looked at many speeches by the South African government, the President Ramaphosa. I've listened to highly inflammatory and racist speeches, not only by the president of South Africa, but by other parties. The president of South Africa is with the ANC, which is the African National Congress, and that's the ruling in the government. I don't know what's happening. Okay, I don't know. Can you hear me? Can you hear me correctly?
Yes, we can, Mark. We're fine.
Sorry about the this audio issue we're having. The ruling government party, a ruling party, a political party in South Africa is ANC, the African National Congress. They have other political opponents, the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters, which are highly racist, and they're calling for the genocide of whites. Several of the parties have called for the confiscation of white-owned farms and without compensation. And this is totally unacceptable. It violates international law. There's affirmative action programs which not only are against the whites, but they're against anyone of any race that is not black. This is basically apartheid in reverse. There has been officially over 70,000 murdered white farmers. Unofficially, the total is really at 100,000. These are hardworking Boers of white South African farmers and their families, in many instances, the young families who have inherited farms from generations. Were never even born during the apartheid, but yet they're being blamed and victimized by racist blacks who are incited by the political parties in South Africa. It's appalling that in 2019 and 2018, last year too, that the number of murders and the open hatred and calling for the expropriation of lands without compensation. And now the South African government wants to expropriate all white-owned property, including vehicles, private homes, not just the farms. So South Africa is in a real crisis. They're in the midst of an election, which they have an election coming up in May of 2019. And it's rumored that because the ANC is falling in support in the polls, that they may create a state of an emergency, and if the state of an emergency is called, if they create a situation, for example, with the complete failure of the power grid, the main producer of hydro, when they do produce, is Eskom, and it's run totally in an incompetent manner. Extreme corruption at all levels of government and in industry that is black-owned and run. The affirmative action programs are basically where employers are fined and are put out of business if they do not have a government-mandated ratio of whites versus blacks. And so basically, they could have maybe one white for every 10 blacks that are hired. And there's affirmative action programs that are highly racist. I think employers should be able to hire whomever, and it should be based on merit and education and qualifications and suitability for jobs, not because of the color of the skin. And the South African government is openly, and this is, anyone can look at the videos on the YouTube or throughout the internet, the highly racist South African president, Ramaphosa, is accusing the economic ills based on mismanagement by whites, when in the reality is apartheid was what, 29 years ago or what have you, when it ended. And the ANC has completely, they have stolen and embezzled all sorts of money. And international governments, for example, the Canadian government last year gave $20 million. Trudeau government gave $20 million to the South African government. It was supposed to be for humanitarian. The people haven't received a cent of that, I believe. And most South Africans believe that that is the case as well, that the government just pocketed that money. South Africans actually would like to see that the world governments cease all financial aid to the government of South Africa.
Well, let me get this straight, Mark. You said there's 70,000 white farmers been slaughtered in Africa. And how long a period of time is this? Over how many years has this been?
This has been, I do not have the exact number as to what years, but to date, these are simple statistics on attacks against white-owned farmland or a farmland that is managed by white people. They're being attacked, and over 70,000 have been targeted and murdered. And reliable sources are saying, really, that their figure is more like 100,000. And the South African government has completely been in denial. They're denying. The president of South Africa has openly said in his speeches that that they're not racist, which is a lie. And South Africa business is leaving, and the basic economics, if the majority of the food production in South Africa, the farms are white owned, and you start killing off the farmers, you're confiscating white owned farmlands. And it's been a fact that those lands that had been confiscated with compensation previously, those farms were given to blacks who were inexperienced, did not know how to properly farm. And statistics are showing that 80% of those farms that were turned over to blacks that were bought out by the government previously under the compensation programs, keep in mind they're not doing compensation programs now, but when they were doing compensation programs and expropriation with compensation, they were the farms were given to blacks, and those 80% of those farms had actually gone to ruin. They're simply not producing. It's amazing that they don't have a food crisis even now, because if you simple economics, if you're it's supply and demand, and if your supply is exceeding the demand, then it affects the price. So what's happening is that the blacks in South Africa are only going to hurt themselves. It's going to be another Zimbabwe. If we look at the history of Zimbabwe, how they murdered and slaughtered and drove out what remaining whites, look what happened to Zimbabwe. And this is going to occur, is happening economically in South Africa this time.
Okay, Travis, have you joined us? Is he on the show now?
I have. I'm tuned in and I can hear you guys just fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, yes. Are you hearing me, Steve? Everything's fine now?
Yes.
I believe they're hearing you. Welcome back, guys, and sorry about the glitch. I think we got it sorted out now, but yeah. I want to hear from you on some of your thoughts now, Travis, on what Mark was just saying.
Well, Mark outlined it pretty well. the idea that if you're taking and confiscating the white-owned land without any compensation whatsoever, that is going to have a very detrimental effect on the food production of that country. And historically speaking, in Zimbabwe, that is something that we saw, was a lack of the necessary production from farmland, because it is historically shown that the white farmers are the producers in South Africa. And since the rise of Nelson Mandela and apartheid, we have seen that actually the economy has stagnated in many different regards since those days. So this idea of forcefully taking the farmland from farmers is something that our political organization is fiercely opposed to. As has previously been mentioned, it's against international law. And in regards to the Canadian government, if the South African Boers are applying for refugee status, if we are a country that claims to support refugees, then I certainly think that the Boer population has a viable case for that.
Mm. Yeah, but that doesn't fit the agenda.
It doesn't.
The white South Africans are best suited for immigration into Canada because they speak the language, they are educated, they are ready to work, and in many instances, they have investments to bring in to immediately complement Canada, so they're not going to be a drain on the welfare system. Over 70% of the current immigration from blacks and Middle Easterners who do not speak the language, 70% of them are still collecting welfare after 3 years in Canada. So this is a dream. We can't sustain this.
I believe that number is actually higher myself, Mark. At one time immigration was well managed and well respected in Canada. Canadians, people coming to Canada, knew that they had to work, that they wanted to contribute to the economy, they wanted a better life for themselves. And what we have going on right now in Canada is an absolute travesty, where we are bringing in thousands and thousands and thousands of people that won't assimilate to our culture, will probably have a very, very hard time finding a job, and are a complete drain on our system. And I mean, it's just upside down. And here we have people in South Africa that are in actual real need of refugee status, and our government is turning their nose on them. Well, that doesn't strike me very well, my friends.
These people in South Africa have gotten to a point where they are taking the initiative themselves to form their own ethnic enclaves. And an example of this in South Africa is the settlement called Orania, which is a Boer European-only enclave. They have their own currency. They have their own set of rules within their own community. And essentially what they do is they sell property based on strata title law, which means the property of Orania is privately owned, but the individual plots of land are sold similar to condo units, for example. And these plots of land are made available only to people of the Boer lineage. And it's essentially a self-sustaining community. It's a self-deterministic community, with the intention of prioritizing their businesses and white enterprises and cultural values within this Orania community in South Africa.
Mm. You know, this number that Mark threw out there a few minutes ago about the amount of people that have actually been killed in South Africa, I never heard those kind of numbers before. And I would like to look in that a little bit more. So maybe at the end of the show, you guys could provide me with a couple of links to actually where I can see these numbers, because that actually knocked me right off my chair. The numbers that have actually happened in the way of deaths in South Africa. Where's the United Nations? Where's the mainstream media? Where's the public outcry? We hear crickets.
This is especially interesting that you bring this up, Barry. You said, where is the mainstream media? Well, you have to ask yourselves, if the mainstream media is not covering something like the direct and intentional genocide of a people, then why are they complicit in something like this?
Well, exactly. I have the answer to that. I'm putting questions out to my audience in my conversation here. I know the answers to these questions, Travis. I know what's going on. I understand that, you know, how many Christians have been slaughtered in the world in the last couple of years, and you'll never hear a peep about it on mainstream media, yet 40 Muslims are slaughtered in a mosque in New Zealand, and it's mainstream news all over the world. Mm-hmm. You know, vigils being held left, right, and center. We see nothing about the slaughter of Christians around the world. It mm-hmm. doesn't fit their agenda. But, you know, to understand the agenda, you really have to go down the rabbit hole. And I know people sitting in here, some have, some haven't. So it would be very hard for them to understand what we're talking about unless you really kind of look at it yourself. And I have. And there's a complete silence on anything that doesn't fit the narrative inside the mainstream media. Once you realize that, we'll go to other sources for information. Go ahead.
It's especially interesting to observe how the ideology of communism within these political movements is tolerated by the media. And anybody who has done historical research sees that communism is a terrible idea. It's used to suppress nationhood, and it's used to essentially destroy countries. It fails to respect private property. It fails to uphold the rights of the individual. It makes the citizenry dependent on the state for their basic needs. And in essentially every historical example we've seen in the 20th century, it was a colossal failure that had devastating effects on human life. And right now, this is what we're seeing grow in South Africa and other countries as well, as the idea of communism. And it's something people need to be aware of, and people need to be observing and be very protective of.
Well, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig, isn't it?
It is. It is. And speaking on the topic of vigils as well, Mark, I think you had a vigil in Ottawa a couple of months back ago. I don't know if you've talked about that yet, but perhaps maybe you could just comment on the type of response you saw in regards to your vigil, maybe both from the mainstream and the radical left, the kind of response they had in regards to your vigil.
I'd be happy to. Again, I'm very concerned about the plight of our fellow South African brothers and sisters, really of all color. Don't forget, it's not just a white Caucasian issue. If you are of Indian, if you are of anything other than a pure Negro, you're discriminated in South Africa. So it's not just, you can't just say it's a racist white thing. The whites are taking the real hit, but the East Indians, the Chinese, other ethnicities and races are being discriminated against. Now, I had the privilege to have a few very loyal people join me in November of last year to hold a South African consulate peaceful protest, and it was to draw attention to the racism in South Africa. We must end racism. And we must also bring awareness to the Canadian people that there is this issue, and we also to let our government know that Canadians do care, and Canada is not doing what it should be doing. We're taking the wrong people in to our nation, and we're bringing in basically individuals who are economic migrants here to economically rape Canada. Mm-hmm. And so the thing is that getting back to the vigil, of course, is that I'm planning on having another vigil in May or June. I'm asking individuals, you know, what dates would they be available to attend and what's best for them. And then we're going to set an actual date, but it will be in the late April, May, or June. And that would be also a good time, because there's also the South African government has at this moment scheduled elections in May, in the end of May, in South Africa. Again, I commented earlier, I believe, and it's been rumored by reputable individuals and sources, that it's feared that the South African government may deliberately sabotage DEFCON so that there would be a complete collapse of the electrical grid. any nation, any country where you have loss of hydropower, you're going to have massive deaths. You're going to have rioting. I mean, it can happen anywhere, even in North America. If you knock out the electrical grid for 72 hours while you're looting, you're going to have chaos or what have you. And that's all that the government needs, ladies and gentlemen, is to create a situation where they can call for a national emergency, and then they suspend the elections, you see. They can legally suspend the elections, and it's feared that that may happen. They're on load shedding, which, if people don't know what that means, it means basically the rationing the hydro. They're shutting off hydro, in many instances, for six-hour periods, 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon. Some places are going where 12 hours a day, 6 hours they're on hydro and 6 hours they're off hydro. And this is happening throughout South Africa because of the gross incompetence of and management of the Eskom, which is the electrical authority there. Well, so it's important. It's very important also in Canada for Canadians to demand more accountability of our government. Canadians traditionally just go to the polls once every 4 or 5 years, and they're going to deliberately and intentionally and willfully flip-flop between the only two parties that have governed Canada since Confederation, which is Liberal and Conservative. And Canadians need to open their eyes, and let's give the other parties an opportunity to form a coalition, a responsible, ethical coalition government. Canada now, and Canadians are realizing that there's general discontent. We've seen horrific, treasonous behavior by our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau. Look, if he wants to change his personal faith and religion, he was with a Catholic family. If he wants to become a Muslim, that's his business, but he has no right to use the office of Prime Minister and give hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer funds to the Muslim Associations and Muslim Brotherhood of Canada. And these are taxpayer dollars that should be used for general taxation purposes of government, not to be used for religious preferences. And so Trudeau has committed very, very serious things. Let's not even talk about the scandal and the affair. But we have a terrible government that has deserves to be thrown out, and we should have a government that is going to be held accountable and be fiscally responsible. So I think Canadians really have a concern, and they need to wake up, stop being the docile blind sheep, and they've got to get involved with politics and demand that the politicians become more accountable.
Well, if SNC-Lavalin hasn't woken up the Canadian public, then I don't know what will.
Mm-hmm. Look at the Liberal government taking $95 million out of our Canada pension plan and giving that to the government of India for low cost housing. This is embezzlement of funds. It's theft, as far as I'm concerned. I think most Canadians would agree that the Canada pension plan should have been properly, wisely invested, and you produce interest on that capital investment. You don't dare go going into that money and using it for anything other than the intention, you know, what it was intended for. That's just another example. Then another example is that the Liberal government took over $200 million. The Auditor General of Canada has said that they cannot account for $200 million. It just disappeared. That's just one example.
I think the numbers I read were even bigger than that, but that's just one example. And we could actually sit here, gentlemen, and for the next hour, throw back unbelievable examples of corruption in our government that we've seen and are experiencing right now. I know that there's a couple of the people that are a person that just joined the call, I believe, Steve. I think it's one of your friends from South Africa there, Mark. So
not
if they
yet.
Are on the call, maybe you could introduce them.
Not yet.
They are in here.
Not yet. They're okay. Not in yet.
Okay. Well, let us know when we do have people joining us. But, yeah, you know, I mean, any government that tells us that they're going to bring ISIS fighters back into Canada and reintegrate them into Canadian society, and we're paying for that, and these people would kill you just as soon as look at you is outright treason being committed against the Canadian people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one example of multiple treasonous acts being perpetrated by this government. The good news is I do see people waking up in droves now. I really see a change in the general population's attitude. Okay, so
I think we're at the point where the general population of Canadians have woken up, and they're at the point where they're seeking solutions, and they're simply not finding it with the Liberal Party or the Conservative Party, which is why there's such an opportunity for new parties such as our Nationalist Party, such as the People's Party, such as perhaps any of the other smaller parties. And I've said it many times before, and I'll say it again. If there hasn't been a vote of non-confidence from our Governor General, Julie Payette, then we're not going to see a vote of non-confidence. It's time for Canadians to get active and make the change they want to see themselves.
Yeah, it's now or never. Are we joined now, Steve?
I think everybody's in, yes.
Okay. Hi. Yeah, maybe you could introduce our guest there, Mark.
I didn't put many invitations out. I don't know who has just come into the show or not, and maybe perhaps they can introduce themselves.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we hear you.
Yes.
Who are we talking to?
Yeah, let me know when you guys can hear me.
We can hear you just fine.
We hear you now.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Mike, and I don't know if you want me to mention the YouTube channel that's what got me here was I got involved in the South African situation quite accidentally by way of a YouTube channel that deals with mostly American politics. So if you let me pull over here, and I'm so sorry, I'm literally driving a truck with a giant German Shepherd sitting in my lap. Yeah, I just took him swimming in the river here, so I pulled over, and I don't want to lose contact with you. So, basically, I have a YouTube channel. I'm a retired Los Angeles police officer and a former federal agent in Washington, D.C., with an inspector general for railroad. So, I come from I'm a law enforcement background. I'm very conservative, former Army paratrooper, blah, blah, blah. And through the years, especially the Obama years, my YouTube channel, which is LMS Tactical, all one word, that it morphed into a political thing. And I saw some YouTube videos that dealt with the farm murders. And forgive me if you've already covered some of this. You just tell me to shut up and I'll shut up. But, you know, what ended up happening was me being me. One minute I was a retired guy playing with my German Shepherd puppy. And the next minute, I'm operating an underground railroad to save South Africa, and I couldn't be prouder. I have spent the last few weeks immersing myself in the situation going on there, above and beyond just the farm murders. So the learning curve is steep, but I'm on a rapid, accelerated learning program. Like many Americans, you know, I probably would have thought that South African people had zebras in their front yard. Now I could probably teach a class on South Africa. So I've really made a lot of headway, and I still got a long way to go. But my main focus and purpose now is really threefold. Number one, of course, the video I did generated an unbelievable amount of attention from all over the world, mostly South Africa. And I was surprised at how many South Africans were, and forgive me for my South African brothers and sisters, but we're not real focused or clear on exactly what's happening in their own country. There seems to be a different phases of awareness, from flat out denial to, you know, the end of the world is tomorrow, you know, and everything in between. So, you know, I've met families that are divided, you know, not speaking to each other because they think one side thinks the other's overreacting. And, you know, I think it's just too much. I'm not Dr. Phil, but I think it's sometimes it's too much to process for some people because, you know, it's your whole country going down the crapper. So I met a family of four, and I am in the process of doing everything humanly possible to get them out. And I look at this as being very similar to the Holocaust in, you know, and back in the late, you know, just before World War II in the 30s, when all of the anti-Jewish stuff was happening in Europe, you know, there was plausible deniability for the rest of the world. But we don't have that today. We've got internet. We've got massive communication. And I'm going to tell you, sometimes you play the game throughout your life of what would I have done if I was alive during the Holocaust? Well, guess what? We are alive, and this is happening, and these are real people, and these are real families, real flesh and blood, and they're dying is the least of their worries. It's the method of death, and I'm referring specifically to the farm murders. It's the sadistic way that they're dying. By the time they die, it's almost probably a blessing, and I'm not one that's going to sit quiet and allow that to happen. I'm not Gandhi, and I'm not some guy that's going to rescue the world, but I'm going to do everything possible. And so on that note, I am going to do what I can for this family, and I will get them here, and they will be in my house, and I will sponsor them until they become citizens of this country. That's going to happen. I'm sorry?
God bless you.
Kudos to you, my friend. Kudos to you.
Thank you, brother. No, it's, you know, this is just one of the, I think, and to my wife, too, I wish she was here. There was no question. She's an Amerasian from Vietnam, and I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but she saw her own country fall to communism and suffered the consequences. So, you know, the other thing I want to do is it's an awareness thing. And Americans, and listen, I'm just going to be honest here. Cut me off if you have to. We are in a situation now politically where it is not politically correct to assist or help white people in need. Now, there's no possible way to say this without sounding like a racist, and that is because the weaponization of political correctness has become so effective that it is more devastating than the nuclear bomb, in my opinion.
It is so.
You know,
it is so.
It forces us, and look, I look at President Trump, who I'm a big supporter of, and I tell people sometimes, well, I get asked from South African folks, you know, why isn't President Trump doing more? My own thesis on it is that, you know, we've got an election coming up in 2020, and if he was to try and help an old white lady cross the street, that could derail his election because the rest of this country would call him a racist. Why aren't you helping the black people? Why are you only helping the white old lady? So I think he's probably doing a lot more than we know about behind the scenes. I hope so. But nevertheless, whatever he's doing or whatever the other Western countries are or are not doing, individuals have absolutely every responsibility to get involved. And on that note, I'll just say one more thing, and then I'll take a breath because I'm turning blue. There's an organization that's called www.kingresettlementprogram.org, and that is run by a South African expat who is really a professional woman. And the goal of this organization is to do everything possible to help those South Africans that do want to leave the country. And I know there's a big divide on the ground in South Africa. You know, we're talking about a proud people with a proud history. And a lot of these people don't want to leave their country. They'd rather die defending it. And listen, as a tattooed ex-cop, former paratrooper, I get that. But not everybody is a warrior. And some people are saying, hey, man, we've got to get our kids out of here. So I have respect for both groups. And for those that want to get out, this lady is running this organization on her own, with her own money and the donations that me and maybe two other people in the world have given her. There is a PayPal donation button on that website. And if anybody listening can donate even $5, it's www.kingresettlementprogram.org. No money ever spent on earth was ever for a better reason, because it's like helping Jews escape Nazi Germany. It's all legitimate. Since you haven't cut me off yet, if you want to help me help the four-member family, in the PayPal box on that is, you can put in the notes, please donate to the Mason Family Fund. Because the family's going to remain anonymous, and Mason is my dog's name. He's sitting right here. And that way, that money will be funneled to help me help this family of four get out of South Africa, which, by the way, as much as a lot of the Africans or the black Africans hate the whites, they're not making it very easy for these people to get out of there. And I'm so sorry if I filibustered. I'll take a breath.
Hey, Mike, thank you for your call. No, I'm going to let my guest talk to you. But, I've had a quick look at your site, and I'd say people go have a look at LMS Tactical and his videos there. I'm looking at them. I would appreciate, Mike, if you reach out and connect with me, and I'd love to have you in for a chat sometime on another show. Go ahead. Somebody want to put a I would love to continue this conversation with you, my friend. Somebody want to put a question to this gentleman? I know we also got somebody else, I believe, sitting in the room. So,
you have two from South Africa, here, Barry.
A chance to talk.
Barry.
I'd like to have a comment, and I would just like to say that that last gentleman spoke extremely well. He articulates very well. And as one Canadian, I'd like to say to a fellow American, well, to an American, God bless Donald Trump. May he have not just one term, but two successful terms. I think Donald Trump is a wonderful president. He's done a great many things. He's facing an obstacle, horrific obstacle by the Democrats in wanting to build that wall. The wall is so necessary because the United States has a terrible drug epidemic. A lot of drugs are coming in from the southern borders. They need to have that wall. They also need to have responsible immigration, lawful, properly vetted immigration, not illegals coming in. And that's just an example. But the thing is that God bless that person and others who are helping another human being. And in this case, he's helping a family of four. This is so wonderful. But I want to point out, I want to point out that there are many families, people that I've talked to in South Africa who are poor. They've got no sponsorship. And they're living and dwelling in white ghettos. What's happening now, and the public is not aware of this, that the whites who had jobs, they're being thrown out of their jobs through black South African government affirmative actions, and the employers are forced to let them go. They then cannot pay their mortgages. They then lose their homes. And then it goes spiraling downhill, and they're in white ghettos and white it's awful. And these people are starving. They are literally starving. So if there's ever a humanitarian crisis, we need to get the North American governments of Canada and the United States working together to helping South Africa, the people of South Africa, open our doors to these people who are ready, willing, and able to contribute to the American and the Canadian economies. And so basically, this is not just a Canadian issue. It's a joint Canadian-American issue. And we've got to help these people, these people who are truly facing genocide.
Thanks, Mark. Travis, your thoughts?
I wanted to mention a similar organization to the one that was just mentioned. It's called Swedlanders. SUIDLANDERS.org. And this is a nonprofit organization that's used to fund the protection of non-combat civilians, women and children of the Afrikaners in South Africa in the event of a civil war. So they're actually protecting the women, the elderly, and the people that aren't capable of fighting and are also not capable of leaving that type of situation. So if that is something that you support, definitely check out Swedlanders.org. That's something that we've been discussing sponsoring within the Canadian Nationalist Party. And the idea of privately sponsoring these people and bringing them to America or bringing them to Canada where they can be safe from the persecution they're currently facing is something that we all need to be discussing and looking into.
Have we got other people in the call now, Steve?
Yes, you have at least two others.
Okay, who has
three
joined
others.
Us? I'd like to get them to say hello and give them a chance to put a question forward or make a comment. Who is with us? Okay.
Two from South Africa.
Okay. Larry Zoom.
Yeah, did you like to make a comment? Would you like to make a comment,
Larry.
Sir Gloria?
Larry from South Africa. Good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon, whatever the time zone is, wherever everybody is. Yes, South Africa is in a dire situation. Thank you. Good day. South Africa is in a dire situation. South Africa does need international intervention to the extent that our farmers or our boers Are they heavily, most heavily hit? And it is the most heavily targeted in this country. However, I must bring the blame of this entire situation back to where it originated. It never originated on this ground, sadly. Let us not be afraid to open out what is really stretching. And let us bring the truth to the rest of the world, that the rest of the world that is now standing by, they would rather spend 18 hours of news coverage a day on a small little occurrence that happens anywhere in the world. I don't condone murder, and I don't approve of it either. However, and I do not like war. I've been a warrior my entire life. I spent many, many years in 8 African wars, 4 Middle Eastern wars. This problem did not start yesterday. This problem did not start in 1652 when the first European set foot on this country, on the ground here, because in 1448, Vasco da Gama already put his foot on this country as well. However, every time Africa in the past has just cried, the rest of the world has come along and dumped funding into this country or into any part of Africa, bringing about the lazy mentality we have in Africa, the expectancy, the attitude that it is owed to us due to slavery, due to whatever reason. There's a million and one reasons any person can find. But at the end of the day, we are sitting with a problem that is not going to be sorted out now to stop expropriation. I do not stand for expropriation. I will fight until I die in this country. This is where I was born, and this is where the sun will be burning on my grave as well. I'm unfortunately not one of the people that will be leaving this country. I will be one of the last people standing, and I will be proud to stand. However, I also must face the fact that I'm sitting with brothers and sisters in this country, many that haven't got the means, many who have, as Travis just mentioned, as well as Mr. Mason mentioned, people who have lost their jobs due to the African element in the country, people who are not qualified to sit in any jobs. Now, in our education system, I'm just going to very, very briefly mention, we've got what is known as BBEE, which is a broad-based black empowerment, education empowerment. That means my son goes to school. He goes and studies his backside off, and he has to get at least 60 or 70% in any country. The African with BEE, he only needs a pass rate of 50%. Now, where the trouble comes in is when my child goes to university to study medical, he has to have 95%, 90 to 95%. So he's genial to study medical, where his African compatriot has only got 30%. At the end of the day, when my son is finished studying, there is no job for him in this country because he's white. So his services are utilized overseas. And the blacks don't even go to their own qualified doctors. They'd rather fly to Singapore. They'd rather go to Dubai to go see a doctor, or even to England or the United States. So, yes, we are looking at a long-term solution, but we're looking at a present problem now. If we take the amount of black children under the age of 3, which is equivalent to the total white population, people say to me, yes, but they, you know, whether they breed without planning, and we must teach them how to breed properly. Now, this sounds bad, but I'm going to be giving you a fact. Everybody is pushing the narrative of free shit all over this world. Free education, free medical, free health services, free everything. Now, in 7 years' time, I'm going to sit with 5.7 million children on one day going to the school, all the parents expecting free. In 17 to 18 years' time, I'm going to be sitting with exactly the same couple running to universities for free education. So, no, sir, we are a long-term problem. Now, if you want to look at international risk management, that's a long-term risk. Thank you very much for giving me a platform to talk to. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us, Larry. And I know we're down actually now to the last 7 minutes of the show, so I would like to get Travis, a few more comments from him. I don't know if there's somebody else sitting in the show right now, but we are down to the last 7 minutes, guys. And I wish I had more time for this because I know there's other people that are trying to get in. Mark, I'm going to get you to make a few comments, and then Travis, I'm going to get you to make a few comments. And unfortunately, we're going to run out of time, gentlemen, but it's been an enjoyable hour.
Sure. Well, I'll just finish out here by saying thanks for having me. And we need to be looking at the South Africa situation as something that is not distant from us. These are our brothers and sisters. These are our people in need. And if our government here in Canada stands for helping refugees, then at the top of our list should be the South African Boer population. The fact that our government, Justin Trudeau's Liberals, is rejecting these refugee applications on the basis of claiming their racial propaganda is completely unacceptable. We as citizens need to hold our elected officials to account, and if they won't help the South African Boers, then we need to take that responsibility upon ourselves as citizens, and we need to either help them directly or we need to give them some sort of route to leave that situation and come into our country into a safer environment. So for the people that are interested in getting more involved with our political party, you can go to www.nationalist.ca. We are a federal party in Canada, and we stand with our South African brothers and sisters.
Well, thanks for joining. And Travis, we're going to get you back on again because I've enjoyed the conversation with you for today. And Mark, I'm going to get you to make a few comments, and then we'll take a break, folks.
Thank you so much for having me on this show. I would like to thank Travis Patron for all of the wonderful comments and for joining the show. And I would like to also encourage people in Canada to get in touch with me if you have more questions or what have you. It's Mark Dixon, MarkDickson, 2012 at hotmail.com. My telephone number is 613-869-0524. That's 613-869-0524. And if you would like to in any way support and help people in South Africa, I could certainly recommend the Suitlanders.org. I have heard the leaders of that organization, and they are very competent and full of volunteers, and the money is well spent to help the South African people. I would like to encourage people to get in touch with me if you're in the Ottawa-Carleton area, so that we can together we can have a very peaceful but a very effective demonstration and protest the South African government in front of the consulate in Ottawa. Also, at the same time, we need to protest the Canadian government and their handling of the current immigration. We have an immigration minister who is not even born in Canada. He was born in Somalia, and he is very racist. He has said that if he was to not be reelected, he would continue to fight as a lawyer on immigration for his fellow black Africans. And this is the wrong type of minister to have. What we need is someone who is not going to give preference to any color. They're going to just give preference to whoever is in need and whoever would benefit Canada, who is ever ready and willing and able to come to Canada to positively contribute to our nation and will assimilate. This is the type of minister that we need in immigration. So, again, I would like to thank everyone who has come together today, and so that we can do something in some meaningful way for the people, our brothers and sisters in South Africa. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you, Travis, and a big shout out to Mike. I want to hear from you again, sir, if you're still listening to the show. And anybody that did call and didn't get a chance to speak, I apologize for that. I had some information given me today that I wasn't aware of, and you know what? We all bleed red blood. It doesn't matter where travesties are happening. It should be part of our lives, and we should all be concerned. And I thank my guests for bringing some of this information forward today, and look forward to having a chat with you gentlemen in the near future again. So we're going to take a break here for about 4 minutes, and I'll be back with Ron Stevens, and we are going to continue with a discussion about Canadian politics. So anybody sitting in here right now that wants to hang in there, you're welcome to. But Ron Stevens from Rock the Boat Radio is up with me next. I'm going to take a tea break for 4 minutes, and I'll be right back. Thanks again to my guests. Welcome back to the second hour of the show, guys. And thanks to the guests that came in the first hour. And my apologies if I know there was one gentleman that called in that we didn't get to hear from. So my apologies to him. And maybe we can do another show on that in the near future, because that was enlightening information given to the public today about some of the things going on there. I was not aware of. So always good to get that kind of information out. My guest for the second hour is a gentleman I love talking with. I've done lots of shows with over the years. I'm talking about Ron Stevens from Rock the Boat Radio. How you doing there, Mr. Ron Stevens?
I'm doing good. And I just want to compliment
you. How was that for an intro?
Not bad.
Am I hired?
Yeah.
From Rock the Boat Radio.
I just wanted to compliment you on your environmental work. You're like in your 60s now, and you've been doing this for a long, long time, and we all appreciate what you do as far as environment goes, because my understanding is that you've been saving pucks from getting caught in the net for years.
Yeah, that's a mental disorder that I do have, and it was diagnosed very early in my life, and I still have it, Ron, unfortunately. So.
And I saw your picture with your sweatshirt and your hat on. What was it, J.L. Trudeau or something?
Yeah.
You look pretty dapper. You look really
was
good.
That the one where I had the bird in the picture also?
I'm not sure, but you have
the bird's there. If you look down below, you'll see the bird.
Yeah, you had a really nice hat on. And
actually, that hat came from Australia, yeah. Buddy. It's the most comfortable hat I've ever had in my life. I can't take it off. They make good hats in Australia, I'll tell you.
It looks good. I want to do a shout out to your folks. There's a site here in Canada called MuslimLink.ca, and I really encourage people to go there, because it has most of the main cities listed and what they're up to. And I ran across a thing. I put it up on my Rock the Boat Radio Facebook. That I think it's on the 27th in Calgary, an IMAM or whatever you call them will be doing a thing on Sharia law, and encourage all the Calgarians to go to this thing, shoot some film. But I put it up, and there's a lot of very angry people. There's so much going on in the background that's not out in the general public. But if you go to Muslim.ca, everything's there. Everything they're up to, all their conventions, all of their everything that they're doing is there. And
Mons, everything else that's going on.
Yeah, no, it's quite an interesting site. It's updated constantly, and like when I ran across it, they're going to be discussing Sharia law in Calgary on the 27th. Figured I better get that out. And so, getting around 20,000 hits today on it, which is good. But, the thing in BC, though, I saw this about, I don't know when it was, a week ago or so, and it just, if I can dig it out here, it just absolutely blew me away. I got to find it here first. But it was in the Abbotsford paper. Here it is. I don't know what date it is. Wait till this thing comes up. But this is very nasty stuff. Because whether people realize it or not, we live in a legal system. It was the lawyers that put the club together. It was the lawyers that put the government together. And we're in their club. And unlike the clubs we made when we were young, And I'm sure you made a club or two. You know, we'd sit down and write our rules and regulations of the club, and then we would go out and solicit members. And then if we came up with some new rules and regulations that went against some of the members, well, they had the right to leave the club. The difference here is you don't have the right to leave the club. And if you try to leave the club, well, then the policeman will likely come and club you. If you want to leave. But let me see if I can find a date on this, which I don't see one here. This is a picture of December 17th. I don't see a date on here. But I saw this about a week or so ago, and it's very nasty. And what they've done is BC farmers aren't persons under the new agricultural land legislation. BC Liberal Mike DeJong calls it an assault on the rights of citizens. Well, citizen is the subject, which is a slave, but then he's a lawyer. So, but anyways, he's upset about it. The BC government's latest changes to protect agricultural land include a provision to redefine person as a local or provincial government, which means that the local or provincial government now has complete and total control over your property if you're a farmer. You don't have any right on that property anymore. And this is exactly from 1976, the first Habitat convention in Vancouver, Morris Strong, Rockefeller, you know, the boys. And in the preamble there, it says that, first of all, that property or owning property is a social injustice, meaning that if you own property, you can gain from it, and if I don't, I can't, and therefore it's a social injustice, and they go on from there. And therefore, all land must be held in the public. And this is what they're doing here now. You know, you don't want to be a person to start with, because that means you're a legal person. But what they've done here by taking the personhood away from these people is that they've taken their legal right away. They have no legal right to their farmland anymore. The government does.
We're talking about the page of the Communist Manifesto.
Pretty much. And but the end game is that nobody's going to own their own. Nobody's going to own any property except for the big boys. We'll all be rent slaves. This is the start of it here, which is very, very spooky. How you just go and read, you know, it's almost like gender, what do you call it, gender definition or whatever, right?
The 84 different genders that live in our world.
Yeah. You mean I'm not a person anymore? Nope.
I can be a tree.
You could. But, people need to look into that. So if you just look up, you know, farmers are no longer persons in British Columbia, I think you'll run into a story somewhere on it. But people need to deal with that. People don't understand this legal person stuff enough. You know, like when I tell people, I say, you know, you can't vote, right? None of us can vote, because only the legal person can vote. And the legal person is a piece of paper. So we vote as a proxy, which is a corporate vote, which is what Canada is, a corporation. And people, we were never taught any of this stuff in school. I wonder why. So
there's a lot of things that we should be taught in school that we're not taught in school wrong, but... you know, that's been going on for a long time. Real history's been taken out of our schools.
Well,
don't want us to know history.
Listen to this thing that I never saw this in the paper either. I saw this actually on the MuslimLink.ca site, and I haven't really put the story up yet, but This was when I put up the Sharia law. I came across this this new private members bill in Ontario, Beaches East York. MPP Rima Burns McGowan presented a private members bill 83 for first reading in March 19th, or on March 19th. It asks the government of Ontario to designate January 29th as an annual day of remembrance and action on Islamophobia. Bill 83 is set to receive second reading April 4th when it will be debated and voted on. But this is something that she said, which is really pathetic. This, you want hate speech. You know, they're always telling you about hate speech. If this isn't a chunk of hate speech from an MPP, I don't know what is. And this is her quote. There can be no platforms for Islamophobes, anti-Semites, and racists. Don't follow them on social media. Don't hire them. And if you find that they're working for you, make sure that you fire them. This is not about partisanship, but it is about power. And with power comes responsibility. So use it and get rid of and rid us of this scourge. Now, if that isn't hate speech, I don't know what is, because, you know, if you look at the percentage of Muslims and bagels in Canada, it's very tiny. So what this MPP is doing is pointing her finger at the majority of the people that live in this country.
All of the Islamophobias.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and it's wacko, and if you, wackadoodle, they call us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know, it's you know, it's not. It's, you know, they use these terms. You know, Canadians are not white supremacists. They're not racist. They're just Canadians. And what this does, though, is it makes people fearful. You know, if I say anything about anything, this lady, this MPP, is saying that I should be fired.
Yeah. Is Jürgen in here right now?
I'm here somewhere.
Is that Jürgen? How you doing, Jürgen? I didn't even see you sitting in the room yet. Welcome to the show. Always good to have you. And what do you think about that little statement just made by Ron? I'll get you to add to that. Welcome.
Well, you know, it's part of the massive insanity that surrounds us every day. I mean, it's becoming very hard to believe exactly what is going on and where to find the truth. And the type of people that you surround yourself with, you better make sure that you can trust them all. That's the world we're living in. It's almost like a cloak and dagger, kind of a James Bond kind of novel. We don't think there's a Dr. Evil, but there certainly is.
Oh, and yes.
Dr. No or whatever, whoever the villain may be in those James Bond novels, but we know that it's real. Those of us who study and research and look things up, we know that evil surrounds us. We know that the political correct movement that has swallowed up entire generations now is a cultural Marxist movement that is a globalist, tied in with a globalist communist movement, right, which is basically the New World Order, which is what they want to do. I mean, you see it in the destruction of the family unit every day. The notion that you would bring someone in that is a cross-dresser that wears devil horns to read to kindergarten-age children is
Hold it. I don't have my camera on.
Abhorrent.
Okay, Jürgen, buddy, I'll tell you what I see going on in our schools is absolutely driving me crazy. And I say to parents that you have to get involved. You have to go to school board meetings and have your voice heard, because it's a very, very small percentage of the population that's driving this agenda, and they're using our political platforms and our laws to do this. Well, we have those laws to work for ourselves also, and people have to get out and have their voices heard. But most parents don't. Why is that? I see this stuff going on in schools, and it drives me nuts.
Well, you just want to slap somebody, you know.
Well, yeah.
But they always have an excuse. They always have an excuse. We had a gay pride parade here, and we're only a town of 7,500 people. And they had drag queens come in. I mean, we're like 2 hours out of Toronto. Give me a break. A little town. And I remember calling the principal of a public school, and I saw some pictures when they were promoting this pride thing. And they had pride flags up in the school. And this is a school that's, you know, basically kindergarten to grade 6 or 7 or something. And, you know, I'm talking to the principal, and she says, well, you need to call the provincial government because they're forcing us to do this. Well, no, you could say no, right? But there's a paycheck involved here, so we're not going to say no. Just if either a guy sent me this, and I research constantly, and I never ran across this site, which really blows me away. Have either of you guys ever heard of the CenturyInitiative.ca?
I've heard of that, Ron.
You heard of that? Well, we have Desmarais, Paul Desmarais' son, involved in this, and they have a lot of videos in here with the same people yakking all the time, but. You know, they have their plan is 100 million Canadians in 2100.
They're following Maurice Strong.
Huh?
They're following the Maurice Strong mandate, like when he...
Yeah. Rock, well, I mean, Maurice Strong was just the front man for all these guys. And he did a very good job of it because these guys.
He was a mentor to guys like Desmarais and all those guys. That's what I'm saying.
He was the president. He had a very high position there.
The legacy, for sure.
But you know, when you look at the team that they have here, we have CIBC involved in it, Loyally One, Cisco, yada yada yada. Advisory board, these are all money men. Andre Desmarais is in here, but they got a guy down here. We got some Mohammeds and stuff. Where is that little bugger? And he says right in here, and he's what the hell did that guy get to? Anyways, I mean, he's talking New World Order here, right? No ifs, ands, or buts about it. They're not being bashful about it, and they're just going to do their thing, but nobody hears about this stuff, right? And we need to pass this information around to people. But the Century Initiative is totally out to lunch. But then that goes with the thing they had over in Cannes in France. They sent over the municipal government of Sudbury, went over to this thing, and there's 26,000 financiers basically involved in it, real estate people, urban developers, planners, all this kind of stuff. You know, they have all their plans laid out as well. And it's the same thing as 1984. You're going to live in a little box under surveillance, and you go where the rail cars take you and nowhere else, and so on and so forth. You know, we got to put our foot down because we don't need the rest of the world. Like, we don't need the rest of the freaking world. I mean, they stole our manufacturing out of here. Back in the 70s.
Those are pretty nationalistic words. You can't say stuff like this at that age. Well, this country can be self-sufficient.
What I'm trying to do is get people to say what they mean and mean what the hell they say.
Yeah, you're right.
And and if you're not capable of doing that, then you're already dead as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. And you're right.
Zombie.
You do everything. We have everything here. You're absolutely
if you go resource to capita, we're the richest country in the world, bar none.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we should all be getting a check from the government every year.
You know, but we need to get back to manufacturing what we need. I remember like back 30 years or longer ago, I got looking at Canada and I thought, you know, what we really need to do is, and I was looking at a number of 60 million people at the time. But I was not looking at Muslim immigrants. I was looking at Europeans that we needed to breed and build our population up a solid population, our tribe, so to speak. Tribes don't mix well. And if we look at the Muslim situation, it doesn't mix at all. But if we had 60 million people in this country, we really wouldn't need anybody else on the planet. There's nothing we can't grow, engineer, design, build, manufacture for our own purposes, because we have all the resources. And, you know, we as Canadians never really got past, you know, that old saying of drawers of water and hewers of wood. We've just been labor for large companies. We've never really dealt with our resources on our own basis. We would not have to work nearly as hard as we do. Nobody would be homeless. Nobody would be hungry. It's a very simple fix, but it's trying to educate people, who have been, like you said, Jürgen, like they've been propagandized for, generations. And they can't see, they don't know. And as Brzezinski said, it take 2.5-3 generations to stupefy people to the point we do whatever the hell we want with them.
Yeah.
Which is
about where we see ourselves today, Ron.
People have been
so dumbed down.
But
the zombie apocalypse is here.
Well, I'm a firm believer. If you were dumbed down, then you're also capable of being undumbed. You know, I look at it as a massive deprogramming job that we have in front of us. You know, and the more people that get angry and the more people that actually see, the more that they get angry and the more they're going to talk to their neighbors and friends and stand on them, basically, and you know, shake them if they have to, like, wake the hell up. So I'm a firm believer that we are, in the long run here, going to win this. I do believe that, and I'll never not believe it, that our forefathers' blood is still coursing through our veins. It's just been neutralized, and we got to wake it up, you know. Not into violence, but I don't think we need violence, because this is really a psychological, spiritual war. When you look at all of these players, like in the Century Initiative and that, and all these other groups, I mean, the number of psychologists and those type of people involved in it is off the charts, because it is a psychological game.
Yeah, it is. And here's the thing. These are the people that are in power, and these are the people that don't make a damn thing, that don't help anything in society. But they have the intellectual capacity to overwhelm society with their PhDs and the notion that the rest of us are so stupid, we should just overlook everything that they do because they're so much smarter than the rest of us.
That's what the people have to get over. These people aren't smart.
Exactly.
Okay, they're a bunch of donkeys. Okay, they may have PhDs in that. Does not make them intelligent. Okay, I mean, I talked to a psychologist when we were working out in Vancouver. And I ran into this lady that was a psychologist, and I thought, well, this will be fun, right?
Yeah.
And I got talking to her, and I had her so tied in knots, she didn't know which end was up, because she's not intelligent.
Right.
Okay, just because you go through school and get a piece of paper does not make you intelligent.
Exactly.
But they hold these people and these degrees up in front of people, and the people go, oh, well, they're really smart. No, they're not. Okay, and we got to get over that. We got to get over that one.
I had a doctor come into my store one time looking for a left-handed billiard cue. That exactly goes to what you're saying. They've got a degree in something, but they know absolutely nothing about everything else.
No,
you know, they spend their whole life, and these academics spend their whole life in institutions. They never leave the damn institution, and yet they're the ones preaching down to the rest of us. And the rest of us need to stand up and say, you know what? You need to walk in our streets. You need to walk in the real world out here, where we're the ones making the money, paying for you to exist, for you to tell us how to live our lives. This whole paradigm is upside down, and we're going to change it.
It's 100% upside down, because we built everything in this country, yet other people feed off of our labor, and they hold us in a state of slavery because the general population believe that these people are smart.
Yeah,
it's completely ass backwards.
We're so conned, it's unbelievable. And we sit back and take it. The majority sit back on the couch. There's nothing I can do. And it's really terrifying. That's the most terrifying aspect. And everybody keeps saying, well, you know, when times get tough, they'll wake up and we'll rise up as Canadians. You know what? When times get tough this time around, this is not 1980-whatever. This is 1970-whatever. This is 2019, 2020 coming up. This is a new century, a new world. And the next time the shit hits the fan, it ain't going to be a fun time to be around.
And if you don't think they have a plan in place right now, guys, for that particular time,
we need desperately to do everything we can. And, you know, I mean, it's been a long... Like, I started telling people this was coming in the 1970s, in the early 70s, because I got looking around. I said, there's something really wrong going on here. That's and nobody wanted to hear about anything. So it's been a long haul. But, you know, more and more people are beginning to ask questions. And that's the whole deal. People never asked questions before. And unless you asked a question, you're not going to go looking for an answer. Okay? And that answer will take you to more questions, lead you to more answers, and it will open your eyes. Right. And the whole point of the situation is that once we have enough eyes open and people that understand, at that point, it's really no more difficult than standing up and saying no. People have no idea how powerful that word is. They have no authority over us. Okay, we've been conned into this box that we're in. And they really have no authority whatsoever. It's our land. We built everything on it. They never built a damn thing. They feed off us. And now they're trying to bankrupt us. But when you think about the fact that we have all the resources, I mean, we're rich, 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 rich. And why are you begging politicians for crap? Just like, forget these clowns. Forget them.
We need to do things like what Barry is doing, and what I used to do with my show back in Cornwall, is have open discussions like this and make sure it gets out to as many people as possible, because the media is our biggest enemy. It is the enemy of the state.
Oh.
It has been for the longest time in this country. We're way ahead of the U.S. in terms of propaganda that's being fed down our throat. We've been programmed, and that's why they call it television programming. We've been programmed for decades.
Right, yeah. And that's why I say that we need a huge deprogramming program.
Yes, we certainly
And it's funny, because when you say Cornwall where?
Ontario.
Oh, you're from Cornwall? I'm actually from Renfrew originally, but...
Well, I was actually, I had a 50-acre spread just south of Ottawa near Embrun.
Oh, okay.
And I had a radio show, a podcast in Cornwall that I used to drive to every Friday afternoon, and I used to interview people like Ambassador Joe Bissett, who was the ambassador during the Bosnian War over there, and we used to have many discussions on immigration when this whole immigration mess started several years ago, and people like Shabnam Abdussalani, who was imprisoned in the Iranian jail when she was 16 years old and refused to put on the hijab when they took over, when the Ayatollahs took over after the Shah was overthrown. So I've been doing that kind of work for several years. And I got to tell you, we're at a place right now. I'm so grateful that the Mueller report has come out. I think Mueller has flipped this whole thing in the U.S. If Trump can stand strong, we have a chance. If he goes down, we're all going down. That's how I feel.
I don't think we're all going down.
I don't know, man.
People used to say, you know, they used to say to me when I was young, they said, you know, you're not joining the army. I said, no, I don't want to go and fight in a war that shouldn't be. But, you know, if they come and invade my country, then that's a whole new ball game. And we have a very nasty invasion going on right now.
Yeah, we certainly do.
But, you know, I keep telling people, I said, they're doing this psychologically because they really can't make a cause to bomb the West. They can't come up with it. So it's a psychological war. And that gives us a huge advantage, Once you, I don't know if you ever deprogram somebody, but I've done it several times at meetings where people don't talk to Ron, right? And somebody says, "No, I want to hear what he's got to say," and it takes a little. It doesn't take that long, 20 minutes, and then all of a sudden, the first guy, it just freaked me out because his eyes got super bright, and I went, "Whoa!"
Yeah.
And then he just stopped and he looked at me. And he said, "It's all a fraud." Bingo. And now he said he can't be part of the cult anymore, and his friends don't want anything to do with him anymore. Because they can't reprogram. Once you've been deprogrammed, you can't be reprogrammed. It's over.
Right. Yeah. Once you've seen the light,
When the light goes on, you can't turn it off.
No. Yeah, that's you know, I keep telling people on my Facebook all the time when they get frustrated. And I said, listen, just keep talking, teaching, and shining the light. That's our job right now.
That is for sure.
Okay.
We must be the media.
And I've not been anywhere involved in this as long as my two guests have been in my lives or in their lives. Like I really was kind of in the dark, gentlemen, honestly, until about 8 years ago when I sat down one night and watched a video called 9/11 Architecture Truth. And my life changed that night. That night forever. I have not been able to stop going down the rabbit hole since that time. But I really like having you guys in because your depth of history knowledge.
Wow.
It's great to have guys like you in, because I, you know, honestly, I'm being quite honest about my background. But right now, knowing what I know, I can't stop. I'm compelled every day to try and share knowledge. And I get the same effect when I talk to people and you start putting information in front of their face that you know is factual, and they can verify themselves. You see their eyes open up.
It's about planting the seed, Barry. I mean, if you're talking to somebody in a restaurant or having a coffee and you drop something on them, it's in their head. Now they may try to stick it in the back, but if something else happens that has something to do with your conversation, what you planted in the head comes forward and it makes them start to think. I don't know. I must be a weird duck because when I was like 10 years old when Kennedy got killed, and I come home from school, my mother's sitting in front of the TV bawling her eyes out, and I go, "What's wrong?" And she said, "They killed the president." I thought, "We don't have one. We don't have a president. What are you talking about?" "Well, they killed Kennedy." "Well, they ain't our president. What do I care?" So I watched just a few newsreels at the age of 10, and I told my mother, I said, "Ma, it's a hit, okay? That ain't the guy, right? It's a hit." And I remember 9/11, I woke up and I turned on the TV, and there's this plane or something in a building. I go, "Well, that's odd." And I don't know, about 10 minutes later, another plane supposedly hits a building, and that's the end of it right there. It's an inside job, right? You know, you don't have to go through a whole bunch of shit, right? I mean, you don't have two planes flying around up there going to run into two buildings if it isn't an inside job.
Ron, 9/11 is a show we could do for 2 hours because it's something I've studied.
I never really spent much time with that. Oh, I just thought it was a lost leader because it's pretty simple.
It is. Building 7 is the smoking gun, and if anybody's never...
Sometimes when these things happen, I think people spend way too much time on it. I had a co-host, and, you know, it was like years after 9/11, they're still talking about it. I go, "Why?" You know, that's history. You know, like, so, you know, while you're stuck over here talking about 9/11, they're marching forward. Okay. You got your head stuck in the wrong spot, right? Our job is like in the old Westerns, when they come and rob a bank and then the sheriff and the posse's getting together. And, you know, if they just stand around and talk about it for 5 years, they're not going to catch the robbers. You know, the idea in these old Westerns is, which way did they go? They went that way. Okay, we'll cut them off at the pass. And what we need to do is get out in front of this stuff. Okay? Because you can't push something back you're chasing.
Which is what we're doing by talking about it right here.
Well, it is and it isn't because, you know, at the same token, I don't think we're in a position... At this point, I don't think we've got enough people awake at this moment. Our job is to keep punching at these people to get them to go look at this and go look at that And there's the information. That's what they're telling you they're going to do, and deal with it, right? And once people, I figure we're going to be another probably 3 to 5 years until we get enough people sorted out. Like I keep telling people, and I don't know, you're a Valley boy, which I really like because they don't like to put up with crap. But well, we don't. But to me, the Achilles heel, everybody's yapping about federal and provincial and all that. I said, forget all that stuff, because the end goal is there's not going to be a federal government or a provincial government. Okay. They want to ditch all that and turn it into city states. Okay. That's the globalization. Then yes. You're a global citizen in a city state. Yeah. So the real Achilles heel here, the real power grab here that we can do without violence, and it is the Achilles heel that nobody ever looks at, and that is the municipal government.
Exactly.
There's no parties, okay? And I've been telling people for years that you know, if your local municipality has 7 councillors, then you run 3 to 1. Okay, you run 21 candidates, 21 knowledgeable, intelligent candidates who understand this game. And now your message overpowers their message. And you only need 4 out of 21 to win a seat. And you've got majority vote. Yeah. Okay, that's the power. And then once we have enough municipal governments that we control, then it's a simple matter of saying, suck air, we're taking it over. And that does not require violence. We have to use our intelligence here somehow.
I totally understand. Can I throw something in there as far as municipal governments go? A few years ago, I was kind of one of the leaders of a charge in Ontario in my district there in North Stormont. They were bringing in a massive wind farm project. And we had decided we don't want this anywhere near us, and we had lots of fields around us. I had a beautiful 50-acre property. I could tell you all kinds of stories about it in terms of that wind farm project. However, to make a long story short, we voted as a people over 90%, 92%, or maybe 95% against the wind farm. And we were told it doesn't matter, the wind farm's coming anyway. So we all went to a meeting, and we had letters and all that stuff at the municipal council level. And the mayor and everybody sat there, and we basically told them our concerns. Uh-huh. And then the mayor flat-faced told us that the Green Energy and Economy Act. People
right.
forget that part, okay?
Right,
and
right,
Economy
right.
Act. They right. legislated economy. Imagine that. So, mm-hmm.
But that's exactly why
and it's still going up. That's what I'm saying. There was no power. He told us, he said, basically, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. All the power comes from Ontario. And we said, wait a minute. The power comes from us. What the hell are you talking about? If you're talking like that, then you don't belong in that chair.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the province created the municipalities, which puts them in the what they call the child position, and the child has to obey the orders of the parent. So what I always tell people, you know, your municipal government is whatever government is in power at the provincial level. You know, if it's conservative government, you got a conservative a municipality, and a liberal, the same thing. It's whatever they are as they are. But what I'm saying is that once we have, because the province does have the power, it happened just north of here, and I went through that whole windmill thing as well. But a municipality just north of us, they stood up against the amalgamation back around 2000 or whatever, and they wanted nothing to do with it. And the province just came in and pulled the council the hell out of there and put their own people in there. But the point is that once we have one municipality that you have control over is not going to work. Once we have 20, 30, 40 municipalities that we control, then the province is not going to come in and pull anybody. The province is not going to try and back down the municipalities because there's too many of them. Okay, we become the force. It's doable. And we just got to get people, you know, people don't want to be involved. They're always looking, you know, we were brought up, or people were brought up, you know, looking at the TV or comic books and the hero comes to save the day. Okay. Yeah. And that really messed people's heads up because they're always looking for a hero. You know, I just tell people, you want to see the hero? Go look in the freaking mirror. That's what's looking back at you is the hero. Okay. Because there's no hero coming to save your ass. Okay. We have to do it. And, you know, it's all programming. It's always been programming of the people to make them weak.
Yeah, Canadians are such apathetic people, though. They really are. They don't want to get involved. I don't understand why, because it should be the most important thing in your life. What we see going on in our country. And yet I still don't want to get involved. Well, why is that? I mean, well, the first step to deprogramming, guys, take your TV wire and snip it and get it out of the house.
Well, I still have one TV here in a bookcase, a small 19-inch that I keep here just so I can look at the blank screen and
I have a monitor in my house, and if I want to watch anything, buddy, it's through the internet, okay? Because my TV went out the door about 4 years ago.
Well, my one brother-in-law comes over sometimes and tells me some of the commercials and stuff are on TV, right? And I'm going, that's wild.
What?
I
couldn't tell you anything about what's going on.
I don't know either. I don't watch the damn thing.
Step one. But boy, we find ourselves in a bit of a pickle in Canada right now. I mean, what's going on in our government right now, if that isn't waking people up to?
Well, I think what it was, and what I told people back in the early 70s, I said, when I looked at the American government before I realized that the president had the veto power, which makes him a dictator, and the same thing here, the prime minister is a dictator. But what I told people, I says, you know, what you don't understand is we're living in a benevolent dictatorship because they're offering you all these benefits and that all the time. And they're using these benefits to soften you up. Okay. And when they come at us, okay, you're going to be so tied to this idea of this beneficial government that when they turn on you, you're not going to know how to deal with it. And, you know, it's pathetic, really. It really is pathetic. But I will not stop believing. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe that we can shake these people up. And, you know, when I ran in that provincial election there last fall or last summer, whenever the hell it was, just to check out where people are at. And that 16-year-old girl who, after the last All Candidates meeting, and she was a little gruff about it, she come up and she just says, I need to talk to you. And I go, yeah, what's up? And I said, you get any of this stuff? And she said, I get it all. The older people you were talking to don't get anything, but I get it. And I've talked to, you know, we did one in the high school. And, you know, I had kids high-fiving me when I come off the stage. The teachers were pissed at me. The other candidates were pissed at me. But tough luck. The kids got it. The youth is who we really got to chase down. Yeah. There's a lot of guys our age that get it. But the majority, I mean, people that I grew up with, when I was a teenager, you know, when I run into them now, you can't have a conversation with them. They're old men. You know, they're stuck on pharmaceuticals. They're junk.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always nice when I don't know how you are, how old you are, Jordan.
I'll be 70 this year.
Really?
70?
Really?
You sound like a young man. 40, man.
You sound like a young man.
You're not going to be 70, man. I didn't know
you. I'll be 70 in October. Yep, that's right.
Way to go for you. You know, this is the other thing I tell people that you have no excuse. If you're breathing, okay, you got no excuse for not being involved. None.
That's right.
And I was talking to some ladies one time that were in their 70s, and I said, you know, you weren't put here to shop and watch TV. You have a duty. Okay. Yeah. And how are you going to be on your deathbed? What are you going to look back on? You know, Oprah Winfrey, right? On your way out of here?
Yeah.
And this one old lady, she said, she just stared at me and she said, "So we're supposed to do something." Bingo.
Yeah, right? No kidding. No kidding. You're supposed to be coming with your children. I had one gentleman, I was sitting talking to an old guy in the coffee shop one day, and we got talking about stuff, and he says, "You know, I don't care. I'm going to be out of here soon."
I've heard that.
I tell you what, Ron, I turned around. And I said this very, very loud. I said, "You know what? Shame on you, because your children are going to curse you because you're leaving them a pile of crap and you don't want to do nothing about it." And I turned and I walked away. Well, you know what? But you know what, Ron? The guy's now actually, I've seen a change in his attitude towards me now. And he's actually sitting and we're having conversations. And yet I blasted him one day.
Well, I'm a firm believer.
I couldn't help it. I had to call it out.
Well, I have no problem throwing tough love at people when it's required, right? We've got a duty, right? And we got to step forward.
Country being destroyed right now. What is more important? I mean, you know, this country's given me a great life. It really has. I look back at my life in Canada, and I'm 64, Jürgen's 70. We've enjoyed a great life in this country, and it's not going to be there for our children. And you said 3 to 5 years. I don't know if we have that much time, Ron.
Based on things, we do.
I will leave that for another day for discussion. I don't know if we do or not. That remains to be seen.
Well,
things are accelerating right now. And if Canada lets Justin Trudeau get away with this SNC scandal,
well, they're not, then
we're truly a lost nation, period, at this point. It's only a matter of time before they push the button and it all comes to an end. Because, Ron, really, realistically, you know, I don't want to get down into a scientific rabbit hole, but I've always maintained, my friend, that when the time comes, the technology we know today is nothing compared to what they actually possessed. And you think that these guys don't sit in think tanks and go, "Hey, wait, when you push the button, we're going to get this response from the public. We have this set aside for that particular time.
The tower is not that.
I get in and I think about it all the time, Ron.
A tower is not that difficult to take down.
But my friend, if they do have, what I'm trying to say, and I don't want to get into this rabbit hole too deep, but it's something I honestly believe is that when the particular time comes that these elite, they're not going to go down without a fight. They're going to go down kicking and screaming. If you don't think. And I honestly believe that they have a little tool put away in their toolbox for the particular time when the word go is given. I think you're not really looking at the big picture. And I say that because I know the technology they possess is far ahead of what we actually know about. And some of the stuff we're learning about now in technology boggles my mind. So if we put that 10 years in the future, what do they have set aside? Just a thought, Ron.
Well, I mean, I've had people saying this for 20 years that we're out of time. And I think that's too negative.
I didn't say we're out of time, Ron.
If you believe that we're out of time, then your spine goes like spaghetti.
All I'm saying is we can't go to an armed confrontation against the government because we don't know what they have put aside. We have to do this while we still have the legal channels open to us. We still have this opportunity to stop it.
I mean, they do have the capacity to just, in the planes they're spraying, they have the capacity to put any virus in there or anything in there at any time.
It should have been removed last week in the House when that motion was a non-confidence motion and the Speaker of the House
intervened,
overturned it. That government should be out. They should be gone.
Absolutely. Right, that was grounds right now for dismissal of the government because
he's unbelievable.
Totally out of line. And the fact that went by really, really should shock Canadians to the core.
This is just beyond the pale. He's gone over the line so many times. This is beyond belief, this guy. I mean, his father was the worst because he managed to give us multiculturalism, which has destroyed this country, in my opinion. But that's just my humble opinion. As an immigrant to this country who swore allegiance to the flag, who swore allegiance to this country, I find it very, very difficult to see it fade into what it has become. The entrepreneurial spirit has been destroyed. You look at Alberta, what they've done to this province here. I just can't even believe the morale that is sinking in this province, and the people
are suicides.
On how the morale is sinking, how people, I mean, it's every day it's getting worse. There's another place that closed up with 85 people, another one with 6 people. It doesn't matter how many, but they're closing up, right? And nobody's doing anything about it. They don't give a crap about it in Ottawa, right? And SNC Lapin comes along, and this guy screams about 9,000 jobs in Quebec. The whole thing is just beyond the pale, and I think most Canadians have had it, but they're getting fed a crock of crap every day from the media they listen to.
Right.
It's very, very sad.
You know, and that's why I say our forefathers who first came to this land were much stronger than we were. They knew why they left their land to get out from the Buddha tyranny, under the Buddha tyranny, and they knew who the foxes, weasels, and the snakes were, and they didn't want them in their house. They didn't let them in their house, but deception and benefits, offer benefits, make people weak, and over generations, the foxes, weasels, and the snakes took the house over again. We need to get as strong as our forefathers were. That's all we need to do. I mean, as far as the government itself goes, I mean, what is the government? A government who formed Canada? A bunch of lawyers and Freemasons.
Yeah.
We the people didn't form any government. It's their club. And we need to come to a realization that it is their club. It's their club rules. And we don't want to be part of your club anymore. So we're going to ignore you, and we're going to go out, and we are going to rebuild our country the way we want it. Just trying to negotiate with these jackasses is a waste of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys, you know, I talk to a lot of people in the government. And it's really amazing, because when I'm talking to staff at the premier's office or different the AG's office and stuff like that, they're very worried, and they're not happy. They're very unhappy because they know what's going on, and they see what's coming, and they're not happy. But it's always that damn paycheck, right?
Yeah.
You know, I got to pay my mortgage. I got to do this. I got to do that. I can't quit my job. We got to get by that. You know?
Yeah, and they've all been silenced. A lot of them in the bureaucracies have been silenced. We have situations now where people are being told that your husband can't post anything on Facebook or other social platforms, or you'll lose your job.
Right.
So that's our country now. That's the freedoms that we've lost. To think that your spouse or someone close to you can't even say anything without fear of you losing your job. It's crazy.
Right. And people have to lose that fear.
Yeah. That's how much we've given up, though.
Yep. And it's getting better by the day, man.
It's incredible to me how many people are willing to surrender their children to the sex ed thing. It just amazes me. They're just willing to give their children
absolutely wacko, Jurgen. It's a subject I don't even want to get on right now, because I'll get screaming about it.
I know.
And if you aren't screaming, you're not paying attention, folks. But you know what, guys? We're out of time. That hour went by very, very quickly. We're down the last couple minutes.
Well,
so I'm going to get you to put a last thought in, Ron and Jurgen, and then I'll have to close the show for the week.
Well, I wish I was in the Ottawa Valley fishing.
Yeah,
the Ottawa River's great, man. I used to fish it when I was a kid. Pembroke, Ontario. Had a cottage up there.
I miss the valley. Good place.
Yes,
good people.
My dad used to take us up to Lavarandre Park, north of Maniwaki, and back in those days, you used to take a boat with a trailer. You'd pay the dues at the park entrance, and they tell you to go find a lake. And you go found a lake, and you found a lake, and you parked your tent, and you went fishing. You caught as many fish as you wanted, and then you went home with as many fish as you wanted. You fed your neighbors and all of that. My dad taught me to hunt and fish. And there was no restrictions on anything, and everybody looked after everything. In terms of garbage, everybody looked after everything. You didn't have to be told that it was nature, you know.
Exactly.
And that was real pioneer spirit type of stuff back in those days.
Well, my grandpa, just on the Quebec side, he did a little bit of jail time because he was out hunting, and this is when they first came up with the management people, guy come up and told him he couldn't hunt. I mean, what are you talking about? Well, you know, the moose is out of season right now. What are you talking about? Well, you have to wait and get a permit. And my grandpa's going, who the hell are you? Right?
Yeah.
I hunt for food to fill the freezer for the family in the wintertime. And you're telling me if there's a moose standing there right now, I can't shoot it? But if I got a permit, then I can come back and there is no moose to shoot. And my family goes hungry. Like, what are you, nuts? Hit the road. And that's the attitude we got to regain. I mean, this idea that anybody shows up to your house or up to you with a piece of paper or some pencil neck that's feeding off of you and says, well, you can't do this or that. Why? Well, because the legislation says so. Well, stick it in your ear, buddy.
okay.
You know, just
okay, case. Jürgen, last comment from you.
Well, I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can top the stick it in your ear comment by Ron there, because that's exactly how I feel. The politicians in Ottawa better beware, because things are about to change if you don't smarten up and get these pricks out of there that are stealing our country, that are illegally in power right now. They need to get out. That's my last word.
Amen.
Well, thanks a lot, Barry. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Barry, and good to meet you, Jürgen.
Nice chatting with you, Ron. Awesome.
Well, I knew when I got you two guys together on the same show, I wouldn't get a lot of chance to talk, but it's great, guys, because it's been a good hour and great conversation. Thanks for joining me. Been a good show this week, guys. We've gone full spectrum. We talked about South Africa, and we got, of course, into Canadian politics, which is just world politics, because what's going on in Canada is being mirrored around the world right now. And it's up to us all to really get involved, not just sending links on the internet, but actually get physically involved. So thanks for joining me, Ron and Jürgen. Thanks to the guests the first hour. It's been a very, very enjoyable show, and I'll be back next week, same time, same place.
And thank you, Barry, for doing what you're doing, my friend.
Keep on trucking, young man.
Well, thank you. And you guys have a great week out there, and I love you all. God bless you, and I'll be back next week. See you then. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Take care.